thank you very much to the organizers for the invitation. We appreciate the opportunity to talk about a project that we have been working on for the last couple of years. It's been quite a large collaborative research project. We have several plant physiologists and remote sensing scientists within the same unit, so it's been a fun project for us to work on together. So a couple of years ago when I first, this was actually my second year in Colorado working on this project, we had just started a project where we were implementing several 12 different irrigation treatments, and we had someone who was maintaining IRTs on the plots, and just to ground truth some of the IRT readings, I had graphed some of our midday leaf water potential data against some of the IRT data that was taken at the same time. So this plot here represents three different days of data and several different treatments. I think we had actually, we were taking data on eight different treatments at this time. Across those 3 days, we see a really striking relationship between the leaf temperature, the canopy temperature, these are IRTs pointed in nadir, pointed oblique into the canopy, and our leaf midday water potential. So just for those that are not plant physiologists in the audience, our more negative leaf water potential numbers are equal to more stress of the plants. And this relationship, it's not corrected for VPD, it's not corrected for, it's just a straight relationship, and we have a remarkably high correlation. So this begged the question then, as we saw that, you know, this was a very good ground truthing for canopy temperature at this one site, different days, we were starting to get questions though of, well, as you collect that temperature, canopy temperature data using different instrumentation, use that data across different sites that will vary in VPD and wind, how good of a measure can we use canopy temperature to indicate stress? And then finally, we were starting to explore the actual utility of canopy temperature measurements, and we have different options for calculating the data. We wanted to explore just, you know, what different calculation methods of calculation make as well. So finally, ultimately, we're moving forward into our new remote sensing scientist who will be speaking next, is in the process of setting up her UAV. And so ultimately, we want to move into collecting the canopy temperature data with the UAV. We're very focused on calculating consumptive use under deficit irrigation. And ultimately, the data could be used at a broader regional scale to look at regional scale water needs as well. So there are a variety of different irrigation schedulers out there that could accept this measure of stress. There's everything simple from an Excel-based calculator to one of the tools coming out of CSU from a collaborating lab, Alan Andalas' lab, it's a cloud-based tool that can work with smartphones, and it pulls in the soil data. It pulls in data from local weather stations, so a producer can use their cell phone and assign which the closest weather station that they feel is most accurately representing their site, pull the data in from there, give a starting point of soil moisture, and then the scheduler, the wise scheduler, can calculate as they irrigate over the season how much they need to irrigate to maintain full ET. So the tool is not currently set up to accept a measurement of ground truth canopy stress. So it will calculate a stress coefficient that's based from the canopy coefficients, but it's not ground truth currently in any way. So we wanted to basically put in a method to actually accept a ground truth measurement that the producer could then put in what their canopy temperature is and have then the tool calculate where their crop was in relation to the environmental needs of the crop. So I mentioned that we were using several different tools looking forward into the future, that we wanted to ultimately be able to take data with the nadir view from a UAV. But we had another collaborator of ours in the engineering department who was interested in just a handheld device, a cheap, inexpensive thermal gun that could be purchased just at Lowe's, Home Depot, and see if that could be used. We also, this past year, the FLIR 1 has come out and been a very exciting handheld, very inexpensive way that a producer could get canopy temperature as well. We have our research grade oblique view apogees mounted on posts pointing into the canopy. And this here is the crop scan, the MSR5, that's mounted on a post above the canopy, so we hold it up over the canopy, and it's giving basically this nadir view that you would get from a UAV. So it's a handheld piece of equipment that we can simulate what a UAV would see. We are collecting plant stress data with a pressure bomb, which is just from our physiology camp, that is our most ground truth gold standard method of collecting an indication of stress. We also have whole plant transpiration from the sap flow equipment, the Dynamax heat balance type sap flow gauges. Canopy height is recorded, and percent ground cover for each site that we were at was also collected. And we had a couple of different ways that percent ground cover could be collected. We can get it off the track. We have a reflectance tractor that drives to the site at one site and can get canopy temperature from images, percent cover from the images. But we could also use a very simple stick. And this is basically, this is a stick of PVC, and it's lab tape on that stick. And so there's 10 pieces of orange tape, and we can then just put it underneath the canopy and see, you know, quick estimation of...
You need a microphone.
Okay, sorry about that. I keep fading in and out of the microphone. Let me know in the back if you have any trouble hearing me. So this, just using these 10 sticks of tape, we can tell what percent is lit or not lit. We have a weather station at each of the sites that we were collecting data from that's part of our Colorado CoAgMet site. So for this project, the first year of this project, we actually collected data locally. We are situated in Fort Collins, which is right about here, and we have RDEC, which is the research farm for CSU, very close by. The field site that the USDA, my unit, maintains is LRF. It's in Greeley, about 45 minutes away. We also had a site that we were accessing in LaSalle. So what we have going on in Colorado is that we have the Rocky Mountains going vertically across the state, and so all sites east are essentially drier than this western site. The clouds come over the mountains, and they deposit their rain in the mountains, and so as you go on the other side of the mountains, you are right here in Greeley and LaSalle, you are in the peak of the rain shadow from the mountains. So RDEC is actually a little bit more wet. In Fort Collins, we're a little bit more wet. Then this is the peak of the rain shadow, and then after that, the clouds start accumulating rain. And so by the time you get to Akron, you can start dry land agriculture, whereas on the Front Range we're very, very dry. Akron, we start right about here, we start getting more dry land agriculture. Burlington, Walsh, this corner of the state here is actually extremely hot and dry. We have extremely wind, very hot, dry winds that go across. So VPD in this corner is extremely high. So a quick comparison of different devices. We have data from the first year where we were using a lot of that handheld equipment. We were using the thermal gun. And this right now we have on this graph temperature, and I've switched the axis here on you. This is now in bars. So now our extreme stress would be at this corner. Of the scale, but we see that we can apply different corrections and get all of our devices to fall along the same line. So in these gray dots is the thermal gun that we have, and with the emissivity correction, there is more scatter in those data points, but we can get it to fall along the line. The oblique IRTs are here in the triangles, and the crop scan are very extremely well aligned at this site. Now, this site is also our LRF site, our site in Greeley, our research farm maintained by the USDA, where we've got very good cover and very little background, soil background. So we were happy to see that things aligned. This is this current year, this past year. We have again at LRF the crop scan and the FLIR 1. We started working with the FLIR 1 this year because they came out with another thermal gun, and we were using a Ryobi that was no longer made. And so this the Ryobi that they came out with this year turned out to be very inaccurate, and so we stopped using it. The one that we had last year was, it had a lithium ion battery and it was pretty reliable. The one this year is working with a 9-volt battery and it's heating up on us as we're using it. So we stopped using it and switched over to using the FLIR 1, which we were happy to see had really excellent correlation, really closely aligned with our crop scan. This site, however, at Ardec was a site where the drought treatment, so all of our sites had drought treatments to some degree. At Burlington, we were using a center pivot that tended to run dry as the season went on, and so we were taking data before and after the pivot. But all of our other sites had research. We were piggybacking off of experiments that had ongoing irrigation treatments. And so our Ardec site, though, the treatments were very extreme, and even the well-watered, they had had the pivot, the linear move sprinkler actually had broken down. And so even the 100% irrigated had not maintained, they had gone through a dry spell, so it didn't get quite the full cover that our other sites did. And so now we're seeing that the crop scan here, the soil background is starting to be a little problematic. So we actually have more faith here in our FLIR 1 images, and our crop scan, we believe, is actually the corrections. Even though we were applying corrections with more soil background showing, it suggests that we think we want to spend a little bit more time with this, but we think that the soil background corrections are something that we need to work a little bit more on. Okay, so I'm going to move on to talking a little bit about how we're using now the stress coefficients calculated from that canopy temperature. So the standard equation using reference ET KCB, which is a transpiration coefficient, which is weighted by the canopy cover, stress coefficient that could come in via all sorts of different calculations and methods, and our evaporation coefficient. I'm going to be focusing on this part of the equation where we're going to be calculating transpiration and of the plants, because we're ground truthing against sap flow, and so I'm going to ignore this part here. So we're going to be exploring how the stress coefficients affect the transpiration measurement in particular. So the KS can come in from two different ways. The first way I'm going to show you is bringing that KS in via the crop water stress index. And so it is actually the KS then will be a straight calculation, 1 minus CWSI. And in this first example that I'm going to show you, it's Weiwei and Ming's method of calculating CWSI from this theoretical method using an average seasonal aerodynamic resistance. And so we use this basically to take a look at how... my legend disappeared. These actually were... 5 different sites, and it's from this year's data, and it's using the canopy temperature from the floor 1 at all of these 5 different sites that we had this year. And all of our sites that are basically closer to the Rocky Mountains, they align very well. These two sites here, this is our Burlington site, which has a little bit higher wind. We were there on a day that it was at the end of the season. It was basically we had made one last-ditch attempt to go take another set of data. We had intended to take 3 days of data at each one of these sites, and every single one of our sites, except for Burlington, had ended up getting hit by hail damage this year. So we ended up taking 1 or 2 days of data at these sites earlier in the season, and then we tried to basically go to Burlington and take another day of data, but it was at the end of the season, and there was almost no stress. It had just rained. And so we see basically it's the data is aligning on the wetter end, very little stress. And it was a very windy day, but extremely low VPD because it was cooler at the end of the season. This site here is our Walsh site, which is in that corner of the state, which has incredibly high VPD, very, very hot, dry winds that come through. And so we see basically it's on the more stressed side, but it is overall, there is nice alignment, and so we concerns about the wind in particular and different VPD causing these lines to not align. And it's not bad, but we would like to see them get a little closer. So we're exploring basically what else we can do in the data to calculate a local baseline and deal with the wind. So there are different methods that we can use to calculate to use the temperature data to indicate what the crop is doing. And in particular, we can calculate this canopy stomatal conductance. I'm using this derivation that that Blomqvist et al. Has published in 2009. Where they're taking the Penman-Matisse equation and rearranging it to calculate canopy stomatal conductance. It does require a minimum wind speed of 2 meters per second, but on the other hand, the CWSI approach has been criticized for falling apart at high wind, and so we wanted to compare and contrast and see if this equation could be used when CWSI cannot, perhaps. So again, we're calculating transpiration using these different metrics, and this chaos is coming either in from CWSI or from the canopy stomatal conductance. And when it comes in from CWSI, we can either use a simple method of calculating CWSI, or we could use this theoretical method. And when we're bringing the metrics in from the Blomquist approach, we can either use the 100% actual calculate stomatal canopy stomatal conductance from our deficit treatment and our 100% treatment and use the ratio between the two of them, or we can actually use the Blomquist equation to calculate the canopy temperature of what a full irrigated crop canopy temperature would be and use it in the ratio between deficit and 100%. So in cases where we might not have a 100% treatment that can be used as a reference, we can calculate it. And then we're, in the end, comparing transpiration calculated from all these four different methods and then against sap flow. So first, to show you that we can actually calculate canopy temperature from the Blomquist equation, this here on this axis is canopy temperature calculated versus the canopy temperature from the IRTs. And the dashed line is our one-to-one line. And you see that we can do a pretty good job. This is on two different dates at our LRF site. And this now is calculating transpiration using those four different methods and comparing against our sap flow gauges. And so we see actually our dashed line is the one-to-one line between the two. And so we see that all methods actually do a fairly good job. But the two lines that are closer to the one-to-one line are actually our two ways of calculating stress via the canopy stomatal conductance. And both of them actually do a pretty good job, so even if we don't have an actual reference on site, it seems to be a pretty good method to use our calculated full irrigation treatment. And then these two here are using CWSI, both. This is with the simple and the theoretical method. And they're both very close to each other and also pretty good, just not as close as the canopy stomatal conductance method. So to wrap up and conclude, to move into the UAV technologies, we certainly feel that we will have a little bit more work to do with the soil background corrections for this nadir view. We want to do more comparison of the calculation methods across sites that vary in VPD in days that we have variation in VPD and wind speed. We need to play around more with local baselines for CWSI if that's the method that we want to go with. And finally, ultimately, all of these methods rely very heavily on having very good weather station data. And so ultimately, we will need to help. There's this Colorado Ag Met site that we want to help get more stations, better quality stations, and data collected on a more frequent interval. So with that, thank you very much for your attention, and I'm happy if there's time to take questions.